The gospel, as succinctly summarized by Kurt Vonnegut, is about a nobody who was a pain in the neck to a lot of people who had better connections than he had. These people dealt with this nobody by nailing him on a cross. But boy, were they wrong about his connections. Vonnegut, in his amusing style, was saying that nobodies need to be treated like somebodies, because in the end, we're all somebodies, and we all matter, even pains in the neck. This morning, I want to talk about what's variably called Holy Communion, or the Eucharist. It's when Christians, pilgrims, and others gather around a table. Bread and wine are taken, blessed, broken, and shared. The bread and wine represent Jesus' life and hope. By eating and sharing, we too represent that life and hope. When I was growing up, communion was an intensely personal act. Before you came to the altar rail, you needed to have a clean heart, clean shoes, clean fingernails, and be confirmed. Then as you knelt with head bowed and hands outstretched in cruciform pose, you received the magical body and blood of God. You ate God, cannibals all. However, by the 1980s, Anglican practice had changed considerably. For a starter, children, even babies, could receive communion. Many churches invited everyone to come forward, not just the baptized and confirmed. The gatekeeping around who was allowed to participate was considerably relaxed and in some places non-existent. God's meal was no longer just for the approved somebodies. Anybodies, nobodies, even mermaids were welcome. It's important to realize that such a radical change was due to the reaffirmation that this is God's meal, not our meal or the church's meal. And God's grace, that boundary-breaking love, was something the church tries to control at its peril. Who are we to prevent the most despicable scumbag connecting with God? Also, by the 1980s, the whole metaphorical structure of Anglican Eucharistic practice had changed. We gathered in community, standing at the table or round a table, with head unbowed and eyes open, participating together in Jesus' life and hope. Sometimes we even passed the bread and wine to each other. It was no longer just a private devotional act. The private was public and communal. The magic was between and among us all. We didn't so much eat God as be God to one another through love. One of the more historically reliable things that can be said about Jesus is that he ate and drank and was a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. Didn't he get great press? When Jesus encouraged his followers in the banquet parable to bring in as many as you find, anyone off the street, he was advocating social anarchy. For it was then just possible that anyone, oh my God, could be sitting next to anyone else. Female next to male. Free next to slave. Social celebrity next to social pariah. CEOs, homeless, bishops, criminals. All there without their press entourages. Along, of course, with the giants, wizards, dwarfs, mermaids, and pains in the neck. J.D. Crossan points out that one of the things that distinguished Rabbi Jesus was the way he invited everyone, without distinction, to eat together. It was a sign of radical egalitarianism, an ancient and universal dream of a just and equal world. When the fourth gospel was written, probably some 60 years after Jesus' death, the author does not describe the Last Supper like the other gospel writers. There are no words about taking, blessing, breaking, and eating. Instead, the author has Jesus take up a towel and a basin to wash his followers' feet. Not to show Jesus' humility, not to encourage some form of servant ministry, there's nothing glorious about being a servant, but rather a demonstration of that radical equality. The Master, Jesus, is not greater than the servant Peter, you or me. Neither is the reverse true. The Jesus movement sought to create servantless and masterless communities where people were brothers and sisters to one another. This was the dream. The words, "Do this in remembrance of me," I would therefore suggest, have a context that is broader than simply remembering Jesus or remembering his death or in prayer receiving his so-called body and blood. Rather, the "do this in remembrance of me" is recalling the foundations of our table-centered community, namely a bunch of nobodies invited to be somebodies mutually together. And recalling Jesus' vision to be agents of change, love, hope, and justice in the world. Like other biblical stories, the one about the Emmaus Road that we heard again today was not intended to be understood as history. It was rather an archetypal account, a story of how ordinary followers, people we hadn't heard of before, nobodies, could experience transformation or resurrection, and through that experience become somebodies. The first part on the road is an encouragement to connect with Jesus' ongoing life through dialogue and doubting, both texts and experience. And it concludes in the second part with dropping in at the Emmaus Espresso Cafe. Like with his pretense of ignorance on the road, the mysterious stranger acts as if moving on. But as is the custom in the East, the travelers entreat him to accept their hospitality. And it's in the Hebrew ritual of blessing food they recognize who it is. At which point the author uses his literary license and plucks the stranger, come risen Jesus, out of the scene. The message is, never underestimate hospitality. Generously sharing food, grace, gratitude. For through such things can flow the power of life-changing godness. This story, written maybe 40 years after the crucifixion, is saying that it was the experience of the early church that when they met to share hospitality and extend grace to each other, the transforming power of God and Christ was in their midst. When they gathered as nobodies, men, women, and children on the fringes of both religion and empire, in the presence of that accepting, relationship-changing grace, they became somebodies to each other. There's been much debate over the centuries about what exactly is the communion bread and wine, once taken, blessed, broken, and shared. And the church has used words like mystery and real presence. It's used bigger words too, like transubstantiation, consubstantiation, and receptionism. If you want to know what those mean, you ask Jeremy Younger or somebody like that. But I like the Emmaus definition best. Bread and wine are the point of recognition. At communion, we recognize who we are corporately, who we are individually, and who through grace we might become. We recognize our unity with each other and with the ongoing life and hope of Jesus and his vision of mutuality and justice. And in this unity, we find the nurture and empowerment and challenge. Jesus was a nobody who, after his death, was made by his followers into a special somebody. Yet his life story is that of a nobody who sought to treat everybody as a somebody. He dared to make a difference. At heart, we are all nobodies made somebodies. And we are commissioned to strive to make a world where every nobody is a somebody, where every mermaid counts.